got the three of us for the next couple hours on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. I'm Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and Jake Schultz with you for the next 2 hours, wherever you're watching, listening, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus. Glad you are all aboard. Now, for those of you who are watching and listening out there who go to work every day and are within an arm's length of any microwave oven, like, I feel for you today. I really do. Because what I am smelling for the past 20 minutes, as we have a microwave oven just outside of our little studio here.
We sure do.
And if anybody out there, anybody at all, brings fish to work, I'm telling you right now to stop it. Stop it!
I mean, if you wrote out the unwritten rules of office etiquette, surely you don't microwave fish. It's got to be near the top of the list. I don't even know if they microwaved it. They may have made it fresh, caught it this morning and made it out there. This is crazy.
But I'm going home and I'm going to pour
market special.
I'm pouring gasoline on my clothes and I'm burning them. They're not even going to make it in the house.
You know, I would have thought as a Greek guy that this was
No.
This is too much.
No, this, you want to go garlic, I'm okay, yeah. But not this,
no.
Just fish. Right? Little tzatziki, it's okay, but not this.
It's really bad. Like, it's just something you don't do.
I may not make it.
You'll make it.
We're going to do our best. I think eventually you're supposed to go nose blind, according to the commercials. So at some point we should tune it out.
I'm still getting it.
Okay. Feels very present.
Okay. My head starts spinning a little bit. I look like Linda Blair, right? Where my head goes right around in a full circle.
Is that the
Exorcist? You'll know why.
All right.
Is that what that is?
I think
Linda
so.
Blair?
The Exorcist?
Yeah, I'm going way back. Yeah, good for you. Good pickup.
Though. Never seen it.
Last night, the Leafs had the blue and white night.
Yes.
Yeah.
You wore your nice coat in here.
I did.
And you went, and we haven't talked about it at all. How was your night?
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
MLSC Foundation, jam-packed. And it was like one of those rooms where, hey, I was a New York Ranger.
Yeah.
Pretty good, strong organization. I know there's great ones around the league, but not too sure many could pull off a room like that last
no.
night. It was spectacular. The food was spectacular.
Where was it?
It was at Harbor Castle.
Oh, cool.
Everybody loved rubbing elbows with the current players. I hung out with the alumni. I got to tell you, though, Nick Robertson
yeah.
made a beeline for me.
Did he?
Yes. And I'm like, a little nervous.
Yeah.
Because at times we have been critical of Nick Robertson.
Well, we're critical
right?
of when it needs be.
I don't believe this. Finish the story. I don't believe it.
He couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
Or more polite. Introducing himself, just wanting to say hello. No mention at all about hating our show Ooh. Or hating
what?
Me. He was like,
that was my next question. Who didn't even lean on you?
Genuinely nice as anybody you'll ever meet.
Wow. And let me tell you, this is a butter upable
right?
show.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm now I got two thoughts in my head.
Yeah.
The first one is Nick Robertson is now an untouchable on this show.
He doesn't get enough of an opportunity for someone who, how is he not in the top six?
How is he not on the power play? Right?
What are the Leafs doing?
What, like, why isn't he on a long-term deal? 11 large, whatever. Nick's like,
you go and do something like this.
Got the green light.
And totally redeem yourself.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So, like, he's a young man.
Yeah.
Like, did he know that you have a show? Like, was he aware of, like, what you do?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if he does or not. Better if he doesn't.
For sure.
Right? Better if he doesn't.
If Connor Bedard had just done this to Jeremy Roenick, we wouldn't be in the pickle we're in as a nation today.
Well, I just have a hard time. Like, you know, I would find it kind of tough in your position because you're part of the Alumni Association. You have to go and do these events and rub shoulders and do all that stuff. But you're very forthright. You're very honest about how you feel about guys. So it's a very, but, you know, Nick Robertson is not the guy that I would expect to be like, hey, buddy, nice to meet you. You know, I would say he catches a little bit on this show.
Listen, buddy, I said he's a 25-goal scorer.
You did. That's true.
So now the other thought in my mind is if I'm going to have like 15 more guys be as nice to me as Nick was, I'm going to have to quit this show.
Yeah, you'll be completely neutered.
I'm done.
Yeah,
you know, I'm done.
No teeth at all.
So
don't go to any more events. That's the last.
Dodged a few here and there. And,
play some craps or what?
Played some craps. Fun.
Yeah,
fun. I mean, what they do is they give you real chips. You play real poker, blackjack, craps, and then you load up and then you go redeem for great prizes.
That's pretty cool.
But it was great, and all the guys were great, too. And, you know, Willie, arguably the most popular guy there with the pictures and the autographs, and every player was, like, great for,
of course,
the whole room.
Yeah, it was nice. They put in work. That's a real effort for those guys.
Yeah.
I watched a little clip, a social clip. Our wonderful Emily Agard was there. I don't know if you ran into her or not.
I saw her.
But she was doing Q&A's. And she went up to all the guys and she interviewed Matthews about like, it's like, what are you wearing tonight or whatever?
Yeah.
And he had like this detailed description of this guy
I had some Atelier Monroe stuff myself.
And he had like the turtleneck. Yeah. Oh, Mr. Fancy Pants. And then he went over and she's like, what are you wearing, Joseph Wall? He's like, oh, I wore this one last year. And then she asked the same thing to Declan Larson. He's like, well, I got two suits and I rode
two suits all year. It's like, God.
There's two different types of guys.
Totally.
Morgan Riley was the only one wearing, I think, a tie, or one of the few guys with a tie. And I think Emily asked him if he did his tie on his own. And he straight-faced looked at her and said, yeah, I'm a grown-up.
I'm a grown-up.
I am not.
I will say, if you go through wardrobe here at Sportsnet, there's only one person whose ties are all permanently tied up. And it's Colby Armstrong.
he
can't do it back up. So he just slips him over.
There's no signs that Elliot knows how to do a tie either.
No. He does it every day.
Or he's just not
no signs. He's yeah.
There's just not
I have
enough.
Seven ties in my closet, all tied.
Oh, that's so embarrassing.
Yeah, all tied. They're all tied.
The thing is, like, you know that people do it, so it's possible, and you're a smart, capable guy.
Yes.
Just learn.
I go on YouTube every time.
Dress codes.
Anyway. There's YouTube videos how to tie a tie and have like 8 million views.
And I do it every time. I'm seven of those. Yeah. 7 million.
All right, in 25 minutes, we'll welcome in a guy that also took in last night, Brad May, former NHLer. Always fun to have him.
Oh, he was there last night?
On the show. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. We'll get his thoughts as well on last night. So where are we with just one game this week, which kind of sucks?
It does. I think we're at, this is like a bit of an injury healing period. Like if you miss one game, you get a pretty long stretch. So we're looking at Tavares, Knies, Yarncroc, Quillen, all skated ahead of practice today. Timmins, Hakanpää, like Stolarz. They got a lot of guys getting some rest here, which is, I guess, not a bad thing.
Okay. You want to start with Craig Berube on Stolarz?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, more of that today, conditioning, things like that. You know, I think that, you know, conditioning is probably one of the biggest things, being out as long as he has. So goalies are the same as forwards and D, they need conditioning.
Was Berube at the
He was.
Nice.
Yep.
Good. You have a chance to talk to him?
I did not. I saw him, and I was going to go say hi, share a few pleasantries, but then I lost him, which is hard because he's a big guy now.
Big guy.
I mean, the Stolarz thing's going to be interesting. I imagine we're going to see him before.
Yeah, he said...
Four Nations.
The question was posed to him today, would you like to have him back before the Four Nations break? And, of course, he said yes. It wasn't, will he play before the Four Nations break? That wasn't the question.
But he's going to. He says it's just a matter of conditioning
You'd Stolarz never put him Saturday versus Edmonton.
No shot.
No shot.
Tuesday against Calgary, maybe a little bit more.
I think that's
possible.
What we're looking at here, a week today.
No, I'd go, well, depending again on what kind of night you may have had in Edmonton, but I see Wall, Stolarz, Wall to finish out the four-game road trip.
So he just gets one in on his way.
Gets one in.
Yeah.
Against Seattle, who's one of the worst teams in the league.
Against Seattle.
Yeah.
That's how I would play it out.
All right. Well, let's follow up with on Stolarz headspace, how he's been feeling about things since missing time.
He's been around. He's a good pro. you know, he's been very positive about everything, you know, around us every day. And, you know, he's been in a good frame of mind, I think, with the ball. It's one of those things you can't control. It happens. And he's dealt with it and done what he has to do to get back.
So I'm really interested, and I'll ask you two guys. So after, because this is like, you know, it's kind of a countdown to summer break here with the two sort of weeks until they get a two-week break. And you'll get through these games, and maybe he'll play one. But once you come back, I think it's February 22nd is the first game back it after is, against yep. the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yep.
How or do you think they're going to break this down with Stolarz and Wall in terms of a split? Like, in assuming they both get through this stretch healthy, which, you know, it's just going to make that assumption here, which may be a dangerous one to make. But will it be a split? Like, is Wall earn the right to start and be the start? Like, it's just going to be really interesting with the new dynamic here to see how they do it. How do you think?
I personally don't see any way to approach it other than a 50-50 split. We started the season going, maybe Wall gets a few more games than Stolarz. They clearly want him to be the guy, younger, longer contract. 2 weeks into the year, it was like, this is clearly Stolarz's team. We'll see if Wall can ever get back to being the guy. Stolarz is the guy. Stolarz, you know, it's just gone back and forth. I think it's almost like a fresh start after the break. Game. One of you show us you're the guy.
Yeah, I don't think I'm that far off on what you just said. If one happens to have a really exceptional game, that you could turn it into a two or three game stretch. But I don't see anything going much further than that.
Yeah. And I really feel like whoever plays better in April is going to be the playoff goalie.
I do get a sense now that as much as they love Joseph Wall, mm-hmm. there seems to be this thought that you know, you can't stretch him out too long here. Mm-hmm. That maybe he can fatigue or come to a wall, but, you know, literal wall where, yeah. you know, you say, okay, he needs to reset. He needs a rest.
Yeah, well, anyone, right? I mean, like as you get more tired, you're more prone to injury.
I don't think he'll ever be a horse. When I mean that, ever envision him playing like 50 games, 60 games, you know, 55 games. Yeah. He's not that guy, I don't think. And if there is ever an argument that two goalies can work to win a Stanley Cup, I think this is the one that has to be played out here mm-hmm. for the Toronto Maple Leafs, that Joseph Wall can go through stretches where he's a world-class goaltender and nothing's getting by him. And then if you see a breakdown or if it looks like he's getting tired again, you don't let him play through it. You put in Stolarz.
Yeah, the one thing I would encourage them is if you go into game one and say Wall's been the best over the last few weeks and he's going to be the playoff go-to guy, if he has a tough night in night one, I'd make the change. You know, I would say use this tandem. You look at Ullmark and Swayman in Boston the 1 year, right? They decided Ullmark was the guy, and they rode him all the way to game seven by the time it was too late. They made a switch in game seven. Yeah. You know, if you're going to be a tandem, be a tandem. And I don't think those guys can take that personally. We're just saying, hey, you know, you play well, you get to play.
I don't see a scenario where he plays really poorly. I think, you know, he could lose 4-2 and you could still put in Joseph Wall in game two. You could be down 1-0 in the series.
Yep.
And again,
I'm not opposed to that.
And whatever the optics was that night, did he let in two soft goals? Was he just not, his head not into it? Like, there has to be something of
all right,
substance.
So two games then. Two games in a row,
you're not going down 2-0 and not making a goalie change.
Right.
But that's as short of a leash I see from here on end between the two of them.
Yeah, I think you're right. The point is that you can't just say, all right, the whole season was a duel for the starter's crease, and now it's this guy's net in playoffs.
You're 100% right. That's not what's going to happen from here on end, Sammy. Yeah.
But looking ahead here, you do have a real competitive advantage if you have both these guys healthy.
Because both are healthy in playoffs, you're going to get decent goaltending.
And, I mean, just if you're trying to solidify the first place in the Atlantic Division here, which they've never done, having both of these guys healthy and playing well, where you don't necessarily have to ride one or the other and worry about them tiring out or worrying about injury, and have them both sort of fresh mm-hmm. heading towards April, it's a really big competitive advantage you just hoped
to God they both can stay healthy.
Really a three-legged race to the finish line here in the Atlantic. Like, I mean, someone's going to win the division with 102 points. It's probably going to be 105 by the time it's all said and done, but boy.
Yeah. And right now, you give the Leafs the advantage in that over Bobrovsky and over Vasilevsky and certainly over Swayman. Like right now.
Oh, Miralainen.
Right?
Yeah.
It is. Listen, Mitch Marner's having a hell of a season. We know that. He's got, what, almost 20 points ahead of Willie Nylander in scoring on the Leafs. Like, think about that, what kind of year Marner's having. Yet, there's an argument to be said that the biggest story of the Leafs' season so far are those two goalies.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Where you're like, even with Mitch's top three or four in scoring in the league, where is this team without those two goalies this season?
Yeah, I mean, it was something that we started the year as a major question mark for the team that is no longer even a discussion. Read an article in The Athletic today about, like, every team's, like, fatal flaw. The Leafs wasn't goaltending. You know, it was their top four D. You know, they don't have an elite number one D. And it's like...
Allow me to be positive here for a second.
I think we were being positive.
Maybe a little bit too positive. This is what gives me hope that this year could be potentially different. Because last year they played Samsonov for too many games in the playoffs and it cost them dearly. And they put in Wall and the series changed totally. He gets hurt, doesn't play game seven. They only score one in game seven. I understand that, but talk about overtime, blah, blah, blah. And it's every year when they've lost, they've had the second best goalies. Mm-hmm. And that's been a consistent theme throughout this era. That does give me a little bit of hope. A little bit of hope. I know you're making the face.
I cringe a little bit.
It gives me a bit of hope. Is that fair or no? You're cringing.
I cringe a little bit because...
They're unproven.
I think... No, I'm okay with the unproven part. Because then you're just... You got to kind of bank on what you saw over 82 games to have a trickle effect in, even with no experience.
Yeah.
Like, you can't... Can't go and have those type of seasons out of both of them when they've been healthy to fall off the cliff because, what, it's the playoffs now?
Right.
So I'm okay with that. What I do kind of cringe a little bit is that in the past, in the playoffs, where you haven't gotten that save necessarily and you're getting it now, that you might still find ways to have a playoff game look like what we saw Saturday night against the Ottawa Senators, where it's like...
You still can't score.
Can't score. Yeah. Where it's like there's not enough depth, and now we're still back to that age-old problem of if 16 and 34 and 88 don't do it, then you will have better goaltending
and still
that's still lost 2-1.
Buddy, not when number 19... in white and blue, she comes back and shoots at the net. Kelly Yarncroft coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Who's excited?
Me.
That's the most reluctant me ever.
Well, he's playing. He's out in the ice. He's skating. He got
he's
a normal
a
color.
Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. So getting there.
Here's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you're going to see him soon.
No?
After Four Nations.
I don't know. There's you got to make sure that you can fit them all in still, right? Mm. With the cap,
Kelly Yarncroft
they might have to lose somebody to bring him on board.
Yeah, he's 33 years old, 32 years old, or somewhere around there. Had 20 goals in 2023. Last year, he had 10 in 52 games. At least he's someone who down the lineup you trust, who can play, and if he gets it near the net, he can shoot it in. He's a nice shot. He's just someone a bit better.
Building him up too much.
You don't think he's a bit better than Nick Robertson? Not Nick Robertson. I'm going to pick a different name. Marcus Holmberg?
You've gone back and forth on him. No. I didn't like him.
Last year you liked him.
No, for sure. He built up a better game for me.
Mm-hmm.
He won't hurt for sure.
Yeah.
But... I don't know whether or not if there's a big goal that's needed who's our guest the other day that just said the Nick Paul, right?
Mm-hmm.
Simmer yesterday.
Simmer.
Well,
of course.
I can tell
Simmer
you.
Is like, who's like, is can he be a Nick Paul?
Here's his stat line against the Boston Bruins. He played seven games. Zero, zero, zero. Zero pims, minus two, So no.
we're back to, hey guys, you really need to kind of do something between now and the trade deadline to reinforce when you only, you know, have a goaltending duel that gives up two goals, you don't lose.
You need someone else who can score, but you're not going to be able to patch every hole before playoffs. And Cale Yarncroc is a better player than a lot of these sort of halfway in and out guys they got. At least he can sometimes score. You know, I don't know that you're going to get more from, again, Holmberg, Dewar, Lorenz, Reeves, go through the lineup of bottom six guys right now.
All right. Well, Max Pacioretty looks like he's coming back in. Should we get Craig Berube's thoughts on Max?
Yeah, the size and guy that can get to the net, around the net. You know, like we went over some stuff today, but, you know, Ottawa game, and, you know, we had the puck a lot in the offensive zone, did a lot of good things, but still need to generate some second and third chances around the net a little bit more and some greasy goals. You know, we didn't do enough of that in that game. You know, offense kind of comes and goes throughout the year. You just got to keep digging in. We got to keep playing good defense, keep checking. I think we're doing a real good job of that. And, you know, our ozone time's gone up lately, and that's important too, because now we're not playing in our own zone, but we got to generate more when we're in there.
Ozone time has gone up lately. Is that right?
I think for Max, it's just a matter of his energy as well, because, like, up until he's gotten hurt last little while, he's big, impactful guy physically. Can he still carry that on the next 30 games?
He certainly made it sound like it's been a wear on him, you know, in a lot of his interviews. But he is 3 games, I think, from collecting an extra $300,000 or something. So he'll probably play for a bit here.
He's starting to feel better.
Heals a few ailments.
That'll take care of
Maximilian Colenda Pacioretty, which I just learned is his name.
Take care of the gas money for the boat this summer.
Yeah, he'll get you around the lake.
What they got from him to start the season to this point is way more than I even expected to get from him at all. Like, I really was worried that when we had the conversations, he was going to get to his 9-game mark. Yeah. Like, it was touch and go there for a little bit. So this is a guy you just bubble wrap for playoffs. Maybe he plays in 2 or 3 playoff games. He shoots one in the net.
He's exactly what I was talking about, Yarncroc, except a guy who actually could shoot it in, more likely.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in what he had to say on Morgan and McCabe, on Riley playing with their best defenseman. I don't know if you want to call McCabe, but let's check in on that one.
Well, I think they've been, if I look at, you know, going number-wise, you know, I think that Morgan's numbers have, you know, gone up with the offensive side of things, chances for and stuff, and been a little bit more involved that way. So, again, it's just a little bit more time needed, I think, or bigger sample size with it. And what is it, 3 games? And, you know, Caber's going back on his offside. I know he played it last year, but it's still an adjustment for him, even though, you know, he played last year mostly on his offside. So it's still, he's still adjusting a little bit to it.
More offensive from Riley? You
more
seen
shots.
That?
He had more shots.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, not on goal. He's had more attempts.
Okay. He's filtering them towards the cage.
Right. To start.
Yeah. He's trying. He's trying to get more involved. Mm-hmm. He's probably going to end up gambling a little bit more here, but what's he got, 22 points?
Sounds about right. Can confirm that for you.
All right. You want to go a little hypothetical here?
Yeah, let's have it.
On me?
Yep. 22 points, correct, in 50 games.
What about trading Morgan? And I know we had briefly talked about this last week, and my first thought was, like, who's gonna fill in 22 minutes a night, and who's gonna still look like a threat back there? And, like, can you really envision this team without Morgan Riley?
How about new?
I can, if there's a world where you think you can get better at defense. And I'm not sure that world. No, that world doesn't exist.
Okay, so
mid-season.
So is he? Let's just say he continues to be the player that he is. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That he's just having this off season right now. That this is Morgan the rest of the year.
I like hypotheticals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is your chances still better with an average Morgan and the rest of the team, or possibly flipping Morgan and getting stronger somewhere else, and then trying to find a way to plug that blue line of that hole that he's left with just something else that legitimately is being paid for 30 points instead of the $7.5 million that you're going to pay for 35 points.
Tough, Kip. You know, been on this show with you the past couple weeks, and we've said things like, don't have a guy who can skate the puck up or make a play or do these offensive things. You know, you talked about liking Sanderson up the rink and Shabbat up the rink and all that. Like, I don't know that taking away Morgan and adding more Benoit or more Timmins or more Myers.
No, no, no. You'd have to go out and find another skating defenseman.
Mike Matheson.
Great example. Okay? Great example.
Perfect example, in fact.
What's Matheson make?
Three. Let me look.
Got it. So if you can move Morgan out and plug him with a Matheson type of player.
He makes 4.8 this year and next.
And let me finish this for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So now Morgan, who has a complete no move.
a complete no move,
yes.
By the way. And many years left.
Would you not now knock on the door of Jimmy Rutherford?
Oh, my God.
And you flip Morgan for JT Miller, who are roughly, I think, $500,000 each off the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's looked after. They're both, I think, relatively the same age, and I think they both have relatively the same amount of years left on their contract, which is 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make the Leafs better? Morgan gets to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Morgan's going to say no to a lot of teams. Going home to British Columbia maybe is the one team that Morgan would say yes to.
Can be a second pair guy there. Well, it's a lot of money for second pair, but he's not going to play with Quinn.
Would that excite Vancouver?
Yeah. Could for sure. I think it depends on if you believe that this is decline from Riley or an off season from Riley, because guys have off seasons, and every time they have them in their 30s, we go, is this the end? And then sometimes there's several decent years after. Sometimes there's not.
Leaf fans cannot look any further than April, May, and June. Next season might as well be 100 years.
No, but I'm talking about if you're the Canucks, you have to believe that there's more. You don't make this deal if you think you're getting a 30-point D-man.
You got to get JT Miller out of that room, okay?
By the way, their contracts expire the same year.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll talk about this more in greater detail of what's going on in Vancouver on a national hour, but like...
Yes, I do it is your answer.
You...
I do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I do.
And again, this is all hypothetical. Please, this is not, you know, I'm not throwing this on.
We're a podcast. We're a podcast. People know it's hypothetical.
But we're just throwing it out there whether or not this could work. And would JT Miller excite you, Sammy, on the Toronto Maple Leafs?
It's taking a stick of dynamite to a hockey team, you know?
I honestly, you know, Willie is so different than Pettersson. Like, I think, you know, people would hear that and be like, oh, is Miller going to have this problem with another guy? These guys work hard. The Leafs core four, those guys are, I know Willie's got his dog moments, but.
I've long thought JT Miller is a very good player and I like him. I think he's fiery. I think he brings a lot of what you would sort of like the Leafs to have. We talk about the stars that we wish had the killer instinct.
Shen last night.
Oh, did he ever? I just don't know if it's going to work here.
I don't know either.
And is
would
Morgan,
you do it? I can't believe I haven't asked that.
I'd have to really, really do my homework, and the first thing I would do is fly to Vancouver and try to get to the people that could better explain to me what happened.
Yeah.
And to know whether or not I want JT Miller in this Toronto Maple Leaf dressing room.
So now your decor is McCabe and Tanev, OEL, and you got a bunch of bottom sixes after that.
Well, I'm not going in the playoffs with that. I'm going to give up another asset, and if I need to get a $5 or $6 million defenseman, I'm going to convince a team to eat half of it, and I'll give you another good piece, and I will bring in a very good defenseman for $2.5-3 million.
Yeah, you know, again, this is almost like...
Sammy, you okay over there?
I love the thought. I think it's a fascinating... Like, that would be one trade that
you're allowed
would be,
to think about it.
Be one of the more fascinating trades. It really would be.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that Riley is not in decline. I do think that this he's just having a tough year. Sometimes it's a snowball of
things.
This
is the worst year to have a tough year in 10 tries, especially if you're Brendan Shanahan.
Yes.
It couldn't... His worst season... couldn't come at a worse time than right now. Well, I need you. I need you good know, Morgan right now, if, and then one in April and May.
If Morgan is, you know, a point per game playoff guy who's playing 22 minutes a night and whatever, maybe on the power play, you don't care about this regular season that much.
You're hoping and guessing.
You are hoping. Oh, you're JT Miller is a prayer and a, I don't know.
But it's not like JT Miller... Three is on a two-year contract or like on a he's a UFA.
Yeah.
He's here till 2030. Like it's making a commitment to a very combustible guy for one of your more popular teammates in Morgan Riley.
During his decline years in a complete hotbed of like bright spotlight.
Walk about from the frying pan into the fire.
And
like,
to your point,
God.
To your point, like JT Miller, an American in Vancouver. At times must be rolling his eyes going, these Canadians are nuts here for this game. Does he want to go from that market to as crazy as one in Toronto?
You'll see JT Miller blue and white night, and you'll be black and blue. He'll come out swinging, man.
Yes. He won't be as nice to me as Nick Robertson.
Well, if he's good, he will, because that's, you know, how we base our analysis.
Anyways.
Fun thought.
Fun
what
thought.
What about Braden Schenn? The guy fought last night.
Sammy wants.
Yes, but I think, again...
2 years left, I think, just over six.
It will be...
33 years old.
You're going to... That one, for sure, all day long, is Easton Cowan and probably...
You still think, at this point? I mean, he's got 2 years left. That's one that was thrown to me. Showed up my buddy Mike.
Yeah.
Texted me that. He's like, did they ever trade him?
Doug Armstrong has some great quotes today.
I don't know what's going on in St. Louis right now, but I would think that he thinks that he's got a Washington Capital type situation, that he could flip this thing back in a year or two, and it would probably still include him and Colton Parayko. There might not be a general manager that gets more calls on one player than Doug Armstrong on Colton Parayko.
Really?
The Leafs have Leafs can't stop knocking on that door, but it's not getting answered.
I got to find these quotes from Armstrong, but he says he takes calls from everyone. He ends up hanging up the phone going, I see what's in it for him, but what's in it for me?
Oh, God, we're so late. On a day we had nothing to talk. Hey, but, you know, Braden Schenn, didn't he? Remember when he came on our show and said that he wanted all the guys that were around the same age, like the 25 range? Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's old. I don't know, maybe. Anyways, just a thought.
Okay.
We'll take a quick break. When we return, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. Brad May, former NHLer, Stanley Cup champion, up next on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. All right, let's welcome him in. Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. Brad May. Fresh off his monumental win at the blackjack table last night. What'd you do with all your chips? Did you go and cash them in for a nice new color television or anything?
Do you know what I did so well? I actually shared them with one of the guys sitting at my table. So he ended up walking away with thousands and thousands of, I don't know, not dollars, but value of chips. And I think he did well in the silent auction.
Was it Nick Robertson?
You know, it was really nice. It was a great night. The MLSE does a fantastic job, but obviously the Toronto Maple Leafs, the current players were there, a bunch of old guys like Nick and I, and we had a great time interacting with one another, but obviously it's for the fans.
You know, and it it's one thing that never wavers. I know there's a lot of frustrated fans out there, including our own Sammy McKee here, but it really is a great reminder last night, May Day, on the connection between the Toronto Maple Leaf brand and more specifically the current players out there walking amongst the fans and being able to interact.
Yeah, I think, you know what, it's a big part of the job. I mean, that's like the first point of contact for so many, and obviously the lucky ones that were able to, you know, share the experience, the blue and white gala. Everybody enjoyed it. Obviously, it's for, you know, philanthropy. Obviously, the organization wants to do good work within Toronto and in Southern Ontario. And for the players, I think it's a great lesson that you're supported, but you have to support the fans too, and certainly, you know, your business partners. So a lot of young guys, they're growing up quick. They're thrown into the fire as an NHL player, but a big part of that is how they can communicate with those people and sell themselves. You never know. Your career ends and, you know, somebody in that room, it might be his next boss, or, you know, there could be some endeavors together. So there's a lot to build on when you actually get out in the community as a professional athlete.
Brad, how has that changed over the years from when you were a player to now? Are players more ready and built for it, or is it like maybe less need to sell the game now that it's more of an accepted global game?
You know, coming from me, obviously, I only have my own perspective, and that's obviously as a former player. It was pressed on us as young players in Buffalo with the Sabres organization was to be not only a family member, a teammate, you know, one of the guys on the team, but you have to be part of the community. And that loyalty was really pushed back in the day. I think today, just the economics of hockey, maybe it's not as much of, you know, the loyalty for 10, you know, 15 years, you know, for each player. However, you've got to honor your teammates and you got to honor the people that are, you know, helping you get through. That's obviously, you know, the sponsorship dollars and everything else. And, you know, the other thing is being a face of the National Hockey League. It's a dream come true for these guys to play in the NHL. And when you get into it and you're working every day, not that you take it for granted, but you may not be as excited as you once were when you're stepping on the ice for your first time. I think these moments give these players perspective, and it's a great outreach.
You're watching and listening to Brad May, former NHLer, Stanley Cup champion. Mayday, it was not too long ago when we were talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs being this team that needed to find a way to get a little tougher, meaner, heavier. And it seems like under the Craig Berube era here, that's no longer an issue. And then Saturday night, it's like, how do we get these guys to score? And overall, where do you see the balance after 50 games?
Well, I'm looking at it. I wrote some notes down here today just to show you they're right here.
Nice. Homework.
But in doing so, here's the one thing I want to say. The Toronto Maple Leafs have to make this year and the press to finish first in their division. If I'm not mistaken, in the era of the great young players that are now right in the, you know, the prime of their careers, they have not won a division title, except for, I want to say, in the bubble, the one year when there was no fans, they possibly finished first. It's very important. Obviously, every team you're going to face in the playoffs is going to be rolling. They're going to be playing great. But that difference of having that first series that you can possibly get through as a first seed, and then you never know what upset happens, you know, in the other series and down the line as it cascades. So I think the Toronto Maple Leafs, I know last year it was about Austin Matthews scoring 70 goals and we were all on that watch. We were all excited to see it. I think the fan base and all of us, the press is actually for them to finish first in their division, prove to themselves that they actually can do it, play playoff hockey for the next 2 months or the 2 months leading into the playoffs after the trade deadline. And really even segment their games in, you know, I don't know, 3 out of 5 series, win every series, set yourself up that you actually achieve the goals, short-term goals, and all of a sudden confidence is gained by that. And then when they roll in and they're down by a game, possibly they know that they can come back because they've been doing it for the last couple months. You look at the teams, St. Louis Blues, they were in last place under Craig Berube on January 4th that season. They ended up winning the Stanley Cup. They were the best team going into the playoffs, but they proved it for months. You just can't turn the light switch on. It's not the best team that wins the Stanley Cup. It's the team that's playing best at that time.
Brad, right now, looking around the league, it's crazy how teams are bunched together. Like, there's like 11 teams that the Leafs could play in the first round of the playoffs at this point. So it's just a unique year in that way. The Leafs stars seem to be what set them apart on most nights. These guys either show up and they score and they win, or they don't and they have a tougher night. Heading into playoffs, how do you feel about that core four and their past playoff experiences? Do you think that that's setting them up to maybe learn from it? Have you seen people in their career that can find it in the playoffs the way the core four haven't as of yet?
Well, I mean, the time or that's going to be in front of us. We don't have that answer every year. I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. I thought this year was Josh Allen's time. Clearly that didn't happen. He faced Patrick Mahomes, who's perfect. This guy's actually, it's amazing what he did in football. But for the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think your best players have to be rolling. Morgan Riley, I think he's got another gear to get to, and that'll be really fun to watch when he starts playing, you know, at another level. Marner's been good all season, and he's obviously playing for something bigger than just, you know, his team in the moment. He's playing for his career and going forward and being one of the best players in the game. But I think it's about building that team and the trust on the bottom six. I think if I was to ask the bottom six, if I had them in a room by themselves, I would say, what is your identity? I don't know if they know what that is. They're all good hockey players. They all can skate. They all can do great things. But you know what? You got to somehow find something different. A third line that could, you know, a Peluso, McKay, and Bobby Holik line, we knew exactly who they were. They didn't have to show up and you know, fake it. They played the game the way I think our bottom six in Toronto have to figure out and carve out a little bit more of an identity. And I think that's on the physical side. And the tenacious side, drawing penalties, is probably the biggest thing that they can do to set the big boys up on the power play. But we need a little bit more of an identity, toughness on the bottom end.
You know what? That kind of leads me right into my next question and comment to you. And you're probably the perfect guy when it comes to like the role of Ryan Reeves. Last week we saw him participate in his first fight of the season here. And you know, the one thing that I feel for Ryan a little bit, and it's one thing that me and you didn't have to ever worry about, that's finding a dance partner.
Right.
There was like two or three on every team. But yet, if there isn't a willing participant for Ryan, you know, where is his role? And, you know, what can he do when there isn't one? And for the most part, I think he's done actually pretty well. And finding ways to maybe take the body every once in a while. But, you know, where do you see Ryan or the role today, if it in fact still exists?
Yeah, I'm not so sure it does, Nick. I think obviously there's it's a long season. There's going to be moments where, you know, that nuclear option actually is amazing to have. But for Ryan, I think I watched him and I was a broadcaster in Vegas, and he was a really good piece to that puzzle in Las Vegas. He had the ability to get in on the forecheck and create the first hits. At one time, he was the leading hit leader, him and William Carrier, in the National Hockey League. It's not hitting every once in a while. It's finishing your check every chance it presents itself without taking yourself out of the play. I think if he stays disciplined and he actually keeps that focus and maybe doesn't get into the shenanigans, which some of us want to see, I know I do, but it doesn't present itself nightly. He's a big, strong guy. Him on the bench definitely is a message, but the message of, you know, opposing coaches are giving their players. And we saw it in Montreal. They're up by 3 goals a week and a bit ago. When Montreal was leading, Toronto came back and won that game. But Arbor Jack guy turned him down, pointed at the score clock. You have coaches that are telling their players, leave him on the ice. Do not go to the penalty box. We don't want you doing that. And I think you're going to see more of that when it's so tight, where one penalty could cost your team. Those players are afraid to be in that position, and they're not going to do that, especially once their coach has already given the marching orders.
How different do you think a team can... So we have this kind of a loose theory here on this show that, you know, Berube wants him to play a more straightforward game, hit, forecheck, be direct, but that takes intensity and effort, and it's really hard to do that 82 times. There are some games where they don't have it, and it doesn't look pretty. Are they able to flip a switch in playoffs? Like, is it possible for them to look like Craig Berube wants them to without us seeing it all the time in the regular season?
I mean, I guess in theory it's possible. I would say that it's, you got no chance.
Okay.
If you don't identify who you are, the whole idea, the other part for Ryan Reeves, and this goes for every player, it's what type of game are you playing? I know you're all skilled and you can make passes and get through the neutral zone and on, you know, odd man or even situations where it's 3-on-3, get the puck behind those D. Ryan Reeves is a better player when he knows where the puck is headed for sure than the guy that's actually waiting for a pass at the blue line. If I'm his left winger, I know he's on my line. I'm either hard rimming it, a little soft chip behind the defenseman that doesn't want to get hit by that big body. As a teammate, I could set Ryan Reeves up to be a better player and more effective. I know not me today, but as a player, I do think that if they can figure out that and that identity, they have the speed. Ryan Reeves is a faster player, again, when he can anticipate where the puck is headed. I think a lot of times these players are so good, they believe they can make really, you know, fancy plays into the middle and try to outskill the other team. Yes, you can at times, but when you get to the playoffs, that predictability of the puck going behind the defenseman makes you a better player. It certainly made me a better player, and I love playing guys that actually understood that for me. And maybe didn't give them the outcome they wanted if they wanted points necessarily. But if you wanted 45 seconds of a shift to tire out the top players on the other team in the offensive zone, sign me up. Mm-hmm. By the way, that's a great place to be.
I only got like a minute here, but I wanted just to follow it up real quickly on your comments on Pacioretty, who I think has done a fantastic job when he's been in for the first 40, 45 games. And I don't know exactly if there's a correlation to the heavy contact that he's had throughout the beginning of the season that's kept him out of the last little while here. But what are the odds of a guy that's been a top six guy and a 30-goal scorer to play this type of role now moving forward, especially in April and May when you need it most?
First of all, Max Pacioretty wears number 67. It's not a prediction. Of course, I can be way off. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup this year.
Oh my God. I say this.
Now, granted, everything has to happen.
Mic drop.
If they do it, Max Pacioretty wears 67. The last time they won it was 1967. There has to be some type of synergy here. He's a captain of the Montreal Canadiens. He now plays for the complete, the rival, the Toronto Maple Leafs. What better place to have a guy like that come in and actually make that impact? Can he do it? Absolutely. You don't lose your skill overnight. You lose your desire to work on those skills. The time off for Max Pacioretty to actually understand that the window is closing in his career to actually make a real impact.
Mayday.
I'm sure he's focused. And I'm sure he's ready to roll. I'm excited about Toronto. So many things have to happen, Nick. They're not going to win it tomorrow if it started. But this team actually is a better team than they've been in the last 10 years
Mayday.
By far. Because they can win tight games.
Mayday, would Patch fight his mom?
I'd fight my mom to win another Stanley Cup.
I love that. My mom's not so proud of me. However, she's the one who instilled this fire into me anyway. So God bless you, Mom. I love you. But I would.
We love you, Mrs. May. Thanks for putting up with it.
Great finish to our segment here, Mayday. Thanks for doing this, pal. Always great seeing you.
Thanks so much, man.
All right, that was Brad May. Our thanks to him. We still got another hour as we go national. We'll try to figure out what the heck's going on. Jimmy Rutherford, president of the Vancouver Canucks, spoke on his two little boys who do not get along. Back after these words. More Real Kipper and Bourne.